Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
When we first came in, we did not see a car here, and so we sat and sat and sat. There was no car here. Now, what we didn't know, Roy was already in here, but I told my wife, I said, I don't think anybody's coming. They must have heard I was going to be here. But it's great to see all of you. And I bring you greetings from Indianapolis, of course. We have a great group up there. Of course, I feel at home just as much at home here as I do in my own congregation because it is God's church. And no matter where I go, I know that I can look out and I can see faces that I've met, that I know, that I've just barely acquainted with. But yet, you all are in God's church, and that's just brotherhood. And so I might want to just leak a little bit here, too, because as Charles has mentioned, he spent some formative years in Indianapolis, and it was pretty hard times back then, because at that time we were coming into the truth, just coming into it. We were changing our whole way of life, and so it was quite something that we had to go through with, but we persevered. But the main thing that I want to get to you is that bonds were formed then that will go on, I know, forever and ever. And that's good. That's what we all want to do. That's another reason why at the feast that we meet so many people and we want to get to know all of you better. Because, you see, we are supposed to be, or we will be, in God's kingdom at some time. And so we don't know when, but we will be there. That's a promise of God. So in a moment I'm going to speak about watchful waiting. But yet, this week has been really some week, hasn't it, news-wise? Because there's been so many things that's happened all at once. Yasser Arafat, the leader, you know, Palestinian leader, he's ill, gravely ill, they say, and that's going to have an impact on what we've been talking about, I feel, for quite a while. That's going to have a big impact. Then, of course, the Israelis are pulling out of Gaza. I don't know how this is going to affect all that, but that has more impact, too, in later news. And, of course, the big news now, and I'm sick of it, and I imagine you are, too, all of the political talk that's going on. There's so much of it, and the thing that I have noticed, and I'm sure you have, too, is that the leaders, or the speakers, rather, the leading speakers who are running for the leading offices, they have all the answers. According to them, I have a plan. I know I can do this. I'm going to take you here or take you there. Never once did I hear in the way that we ought to have it said that we want God to be there, that we want to beseech God to help us through the terrible times that we're going through with. I didn't hear that. Now, of course, President Bush has made known his convictions. That's good, as far as it goes. But again, as I say, and I'm going to bring this in a little while, that no mention's been made of appealing to God for getting us through these things. Here they're trying now to get the Ten Commandments out. You know all the story. There's things going on now that 30 years ago would have been considered blasphemy. Many things, like the Ten Commandments. People are speaking against it like it was just something else that somebody made up. They don't attribute that. They don't know that the very finger of God wrote that on stone, which was meant that was going to be forever. They don't realize that. So the thing is, we've been hearing all these news. We've heard about Osama bin Laden. He's made some sort, I didn't get all the news from this, but he has said something now that I'm sure will have an impact on our news in the near future. I don't know just what or when or how. Right now, no one does. But yet, here is the thing. We need to get back to God. We as a nation need to get back to God. But many, many centuries ago, when God was leading Israel, the people decided then, well, now, we don't want God in our future here. We want to have kings like everybody else. So before getting that, I want you to the main key of what I want to talk about. You don't need to turn to it. But in Luke 21:36, Christ warns in there, and of course you'd read in Matthew 24, but in Luke 21:36, Christ says, watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all the things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of God. That's very, very important. I remember many, many years ago, going back again to the time I was talking about when Charles and Angie were in Indianapolis, that in those times we were watching and we were praying, because at that time we just felt with all of our being that Christ would be back soon. We need to recapture that feeling. We need to get back into that to realize that with things going on as the way they are now, surely, surely the merciful God is going to cut it short, and says that he will cut it short for the elect's sake. But the thing is that we are to watch and pray that we may be accounted worthy to escape these things. I don't want to go through torture and all the other things go through that. I really don't want to be a martyr. We're to pray to God that we'd be accounted worthy to escape some of these things that are going to come on. So, as the candidates say they have all the answers, they themselves, they can't bring peace and prosperity to our country. They've tried. In fact, you look back through the presidential elections of many, many years ago, those who can remember way on back. In fact, one of my congregation asked me if I could remember when Grover Cleveland made all the promises. I don't know, he sort of, put one to me there. But going back farther, I can remember back to the days of Franklin Roosevelt and so on coming up. They all promised peace, prosperity, there's going to be everything going on for everybody. Along came World War II and all these things that went with it. So things have happened since then, the Korean War and all the many things that have come up, that the leaders have proven they cannot point the way to peace. Without God, there's no way to get peace. And it's been proven by the things that's going on today. So we must implore God's help. We must pray to God for his help in helping us through things. Because the next few years, as we live, it's going to be tough no matter what. And I've said this before. We're in the midst of a campaign now. And with things going on the way they're going on, no matter, and by the time later on where we will know who is going to lead the next 4 years in the United States, it's not going to make much difference. Because, you see, Satan is still loose. That's a key a lot of people don't think about. Satan is still loose, and he can win his way in and cause all sorts of things to go on. As I said before, many years ago, some of the things are going on television today, some of the things that people will say today, just as a matter of course, years ago would have been considered blasphemy, would have been considered terrible. Today, almost anything goes on TV and in a lot of people's personal lives. So what I want to do, I want to go back, because I don't know who coined the phrase, but of course the late Jim Jones did have a sign above, they said, in his campground there, that says, and I'll paraphrase what I think of it, that if we don't pay attention to history, we're bound to repeat it. So I want to go back and tell you about Samuel, about what happened back in Samuel's day, who was the judge in Israel. And the people then had things in their mind they went to Samuel about. Let's go back and look at this, because we're starting now in Samuel 8, and I'll start reading in verse 1. I'm not going to go through all of it as it is, but yet I want to go over some of it to bring out my point. And we read in verse 1, starting there, in 1 Samuel 8, verse 1, "And it came to pass, when Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways, but they turned aside after lucre, after money. They took bribes and perverted judgment." We see something coming on here now, that Samuel, seeing that he was getting old, that he was going to have to eventually give up being the judge, or passing on, that he passed it on to his sons. But being the young men that they were, here they start going after what they could get out of it. How often do you see that today, that young people go in there, they'll be appointed to offices by somebody, and they'll do these same things? Because, you see, back in that day, these sons had forgotten that God had told Israel how to administer government. They did not pay any attention to that. Hold your place there right quick, because I'm going to come back. But right now, Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 to 19. I want to read this, because this will again bring out a point that it was God who told Israel how to administer judgment. Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 and 19. And we read, "Judges and officers shall you make you in all your gates, which the Eternal your God gives you." Who gives you? It said your eternal, your God. He gives this to you. But he says, who gives you throughout your tribes, they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not rest judgment. You shall not respect persons, neither take a gift. For a gift does blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteousness. Perfect politics, don't you think? Being blinded by gifts and all that. We see this in today's society, that they will award this to this person, award this to that. And so they buy their way into things by giving gifts and setting their own way to do things. But you know, God understands human nature perfectly. Our Creator does. So God set Israel on the right path of judgment under His government. And so later on we're going to see an instance of how this worked well for Israel. Because you see, a man named Gideon, he freed Israel from his captors. Let's look at something here right quick in Judges 8. Verses 22 and 23. And it's very important here because I think it illustrates another point. Because we read, then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, rule thou over us, both you and your son's son also, for you have delivered us from the hands of Midian. And Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you, but the eternal God shall rule over you. You see what's going on here? Gideon had... Ben, you've read the story, or you could go back and read the story of Gideon praying down the army till they were just a small number that went in and whipped the Midians. They got that yoke of them off their back. So these Israel come over here then, and they said, Gideon, we like that. We want you to take over. We want you to rule us. They didn't look to God right at that time, but Gideon did, because he said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want my sons doing that. He says, God is the one that's going to rule over you. Do you hear anything like that today? No, you don't hear a thing like that. And you won't, because, as they say, these today has their plan. Let's go back to 1 Samuel 8 and then start reading in verse 4. 1 Samuel 8 and verse 4. We read there, then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together, and they came unto Samuel unto Ramah. And they said to him, behold, you're old, and your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all nations. They wanted a change. They saw what was going on. So instead they talked evidently among themselves, said things have got to change. So they went to Samuel and said, we want to change here. We want to have a king like all the other nations have. We want to be like them. They really didn't know what they were doing, did they? The elders of Israel saw that the sons of Samuel were only judging in their own favor, and evidently they were seeking God's will, not their God's will, but they were seeking their own will, as most politicians are doing today and have done for years and years and years. That's what's going on. That's what we're seeing here. It says, behold, you're old and your sons don't walk in your ways. We want a king. Well, that's going down the end of verse 6. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord. That's really great. That's something that I had to stop and peruse and study on and look at, because Samuel, instead of coming back and saying, oh, no, that's wrong. You don't want a king. You don't want him. He didn't say a thing. Instead, he went in and he prayed to God about it. He wanted to seek God's will about it. Why wouldn't it be that way? How would it be that way today if our leaders, from leaders and mayors on up, would do the same thing? Well, they don't, and we know that. But you see, Samuel went right away and prayed to God, because he knew that's the thing. He needed God's wisdom. He needed help in making a decision that would please God. So let's read verse 7. And the Lord said to Samuel, you listen to the voice of the people and all they say unto you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. That's pretty common thing to look at, because you see, as you look at that, they were not rejecting Samuel. No, they just were using him or wanted to use him, but they wanted their own way, and so they were thinking Samuel would let them do what they were wanting to do. No, Samuel, in looking to God, knew what was the best, and he knew this. So again, it's just something that we see today, because there are so many things that's going on today that we've had for quite some time now, the Ten Commandments being shoved right out the door. Not the back door, but the front door. They just go right out and get it out. I know the in Indianapolis this past week, they've had this Ten Commandment thing that was at Mobile, Alabama, I believe it was, that this judge got kicked out because of keeping it in the Capitol. They have that in Indianapolis. Now, in a way, that's not too good because you can make an idol out of things. And so they're parading this big monument of Ten Commandments around the country to show the people what it was the people kicked out. In one way, it might be well, but I look kind of I'm a little bit down on that because it can be turned into an idol. But yet, the commandments, as it is, people don't want them. They said, no, let's get that. We don't want this. We don't want God's authority in our lives. So it is, this was going on back in these days. So the elders of Israel, they decided they didn't want to have nothing more to do. They wanted to be just like all the other nations. Looking around today, when you look today, would you want to be like the other nations today? No. No, as I look around and see other nations myself, I am so thankful that I live in America. I've been around and I've seen a lot of the way people live other places in other foreign lands. I wouldn't change places with them for anything. I wouldn't change places for the rulers they have for a time the way we have been working it for over 200 years. But let's go back here and see here the people. They knew that they wanted somebody else besides God to rule over them. So here it is that the elders decided, well, we got to have a change. But you see, they did not think about this. Right quickly, let's go back to Exodus 20 and verse 19, because it's something, it's just a little bit that I want to read in there, but it's something very important that I want to bring out. Is Exodus 20, verse 19, when the people were at the mount and they were going to talk to God, and they said to Moses, Moses, you speak with us and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die. No, they want Moses to intercede for them. They want him to talk for them. They didn't want to hear God, the glorious voice of God. They did not want to hear that. Today's the same thing going on. People don't want to even hear about the name of God. And if they do use the name, they use it in profanity and so on. And so it's still going on today that people do not want God in their lives. This is a point to bring out that it's just getting worse, worse, and it will get worse as it goes along. Now then, I'm going back to 1 Samuel 8 again. I'm going to read and start reading in verse 8. 1 Samuel 8 and verse 8. According to all the works they have done since the day that I brought them out of Egypt, even to this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do now they also thee. Now God's speaking here and telling them, he said, they've forsaken me and served other gods. They're doing it again. Now, therefore, he says, God says, listen to their voice. Hearken to their voice. Howbeit, yet protest solemnly unto them. In other words, show them you're against this. And show them the manner of king that shall reign over them. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord and to the people that asked of him a king. So, in a minute, we'll get to what Samuel told him. But think of this, that God has said, Samuel, you tell them, go ahead, and they can do this. They said, you protest them. You tell them what they're getting into, which I would say, according to what I've read here, that he did, that he protested very, very much. But then God told Samuel to tell them, here is what you're going to get. And so we get to the meat of the matter that I want to get into, 1 Samuel 8, verse 11. And he said, God said, this will be the matter of the king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. Now, when I read that verse, I think of many, many times in presence past, from Franklin down to Roosevelt on down, that as they would be paraded about, you would see men running around the automobile they were riding in. Here were men running ahead and behind them, Secret Service men, and I think of this when I read this verse, because that very thing is happening, that these people that the president has got to be his bodyguards, when he's out riding around in a car in a parade session, that there are people running with him. They don't get in the car with him or stand out to the side. They run right alongside. You notice the next time you see a president being paraded, that there are people out there running by the car. And I think of this because it said that some shall run before his chariots. Then we're going down to verse 12. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and he will set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers, and of course, sadly, these days for other purposes also. Because this is what is going on and has. I don't pick on just one administration, but for many years back, as I've said, these are the things going on here. These are the things going on where they do have kings. These are things going on because they exact tribute from the people and do all things that God said that would come to pass. It's just coming there. It's right there plainly that these things are coming to pass. Verse 14, he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. Now, at the behest of not sounding too political, this is going on today because America has given all over the world, rightly so in most cases, rightly so, but yet they are taking many things out and sending to other peoples and other nations that rightfully would belong to God. And I'm talking about, we'll see here in a minute, I'm talking about tithes and so on. Because you see, when you have a man-made government, they are the ones who sets all the rules. They are the ones who sets the law. They are the ones who says what you can do and what you can do to a certain extent. Now, we are mostly free here in America, but yet these things are going on. Because I can remember many years ago, I remember this so plainly, and it was a shame that to hold the price of milk up, the farmers were dumping, at the behest of the government, were dumping the milk out in the fields, or out in the streets. And then in the fields, they were plowing under crops. What for? To keep the prices up. While yet there were people down in the Southwest who were growing hungry because they either didn't have the money to get the food or it had been plowed under or poured out. This is part of what God was talking about. He foresaw the things that would be going on in man's government. We'll get to the crux of the matter here in just a minute because the thing is going on that the government, man's government, can take anything that you have. Let's look at verse 15. And this is what I was talking about. He will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. He will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. Here's the thing that I've seen. I have a grandson that has went into the Marines at a young tender age of 20. He wasn't drafted. They don't have that now, and I hope they don't get it. But yet he went in, and so he is in there, and he is controlled. His every movement is controlled by the government. I know Mr. Lorne Chamberlain down at the feast, we were talking, and he has a grandson also that is went in about the time my grandson did. We surmised they may be together, but we found out, no, they weren't, but they are over in the hot spot right now, Fallujah. But the point is, I'm saying that these, and I have noticed, on the list that they've given at times in the U.S. News and so on, they'll give a list of people killed over there. A lot of these people, the young men are being killed, are young men of 19, 20 years old. Here, what God has said, he will take your maidservants and your goodliest young men, and he'll put them to his work. He will take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. And you shall cry out that day because of your king which have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. There's a warning. There is something that people should be going to understand or trying to understand because the time is coming that people will be crying out for help. They'll be crying out for food. They'll be crying out for peace. God says, I'm not going to hear you. He says, you chose to go your way, and I'm going to let you go so far. I'm going to let you go at it. So I see here that they've usurped the second tithe, the first tithe. They've usurped everything that God should be owed to God in the name of a government of the people. And so this has been going on for years and years. And as I say, I'm not making a political pitch on this, but you see, God warned the people of Israel of that day what would happen down through the ages. From then on down, what would happen when they chose to go man's way and not God's way. This is the time when things are going on that God is looking at. And as I've said before, I've just can think of God looking down upon us and at times just shaking his head and saying, When are they going to learn? In fact, when you go back in Scripture, he said of Israel, says, when are they going to obey me? I imagine that's going on today. But ancient Israel, they were ruled by judges and patriarchs under God, and they got along fine. Everything went well with them. They didn't have to pay out 35 or 40% of their pay to a government, 10%. They paid 10% to God's government. And so they were not suddenly pressed to duty or anything like that. But you see, the thing was, it was going according to God's will at that time, according to God's plan. And that's something that we should be looking at now, that we're going to have to get back to sooner or later. Because if we don't get back into the way of decency, that it's just going to cause all kinds of problems and troubles that God's been talking about, that will cause people to cry out and say, God, have mercy. We're suffering down here. We need help. So it's as I read here, it says, God says, when you do that, he says, I'm not going to hear you. So let's go down now to verse 20, or 19, I'm sorry. Go down to verse 19 and read this. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. They didn't want to hear it. And they said, no, but we will have a king over us. Verse 20, that we may be like all nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. They surely didn't know what they were saying, and fight our battles. Man's been trying to do that for years and years and years now, going out. In fact, now, when we're locked in a terrible battle with the Islamics, when it is really a bad thing, I don't see many people, there are some, but not many people, that are imploring God for help. No, they're looking at these leaders who are saying, I have a plan. I can stop all this. They're not going to stop it. They're not going to, because they don't see God in it. So let's jump down to 1 Samuel 12, because later on, Samuel addressed the people of Israel. And let's look at this, because it's very, very important. This is a point, another point to bring out that really touches me when I read this. 1 Samuel 12, verse 7. 1 Samuel 12, verse 7. And he says, now therefore stand still, that I may reason with you before the Eternal of all the righteous acts of the Eternal which he did to you and to your fathers. So see, if you want to read on down there, for time I won't go through all this, but he related to them of God watching over Israel. He told of sending Moses and Aaron to bring them out of Egypt, and that the people then acknowledged their sin and asked for a king. Because when the people heard all this, they said, well, maybe we were wrong about this, but yet they didn't say anything and didn't change, because it was done. So let's read now verse 20. Skip down to verse 20 in 1 Samuel 12. And Samuel said to the people, he said, fear not, for you have done all this wickedness, yet turn not aside from following the Eternal, but to serve him with all your heart, and turn you not aside, for then should you go after vain things, which cannot profit nor deliver, for they are vain. They're of no use. It's just, as we see, it's a shadow of things. There's nothing there. For the Lord will not forsake his people for his great name's sake, because it has pleased the Eternal to make you his people. That does me so good to hear that, because I take that down personally, that God called me out, and I would say this, that he called me out. He called you out for a purpose. He did not call us out to fail, but he called us out for a purpose, because he said it's pleased the Lord to make you his people, and he won't forsake us as long as we worship his great name. That's so very, very good when I read that, that even though Israel did sin then by asking, we want a king. But God says, yet, he says, I'm not going to forsake you, because I was pleased to make you my people. And he will be pleased to make us his people as we repent and are baptized and as we look to him. Oh, yes, we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. But it's such a thing to know, and I preached an entire sermon on love here a couple of weeks ago, that it is so, we just really cannot understand the immensity, the hugest, the large love that God has for us. It's just something I can't get in my mind, and I don't think many of us can, because God loved us so much that he allowed his own son to be killed for us. And he loved Israel back in that time, but they rejected him, but yet he said, no, I love you, and I want to make you my people. And so we go on down and see something, because see, here it is that God knew. God knows the end from the beginning. Let's look at Isaiah 9 and verse 6. Isaiah 9 and verse 6. We've read this many, many times, and I know most of us would probably repeat this by heart, but let's read it. And in Isaiah 9, verse 6, we read, "For unto us a child is born, and to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." The Prince of Peace. Here's the answer right here. It's written many, many centuries ago. But here's an answer to what we could be doing today. Here's an answer to what ancient Israel missed because they wanted a king, that they missed the way of peace. But here comes the prophecy of Jesus Christ to come. The government shall be upon his shoulder, and he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God. That is really something to think about, because Isaiah was inspired to write about the coming ruler of all this earth. Let's look at verse 7. "Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. Upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and the justice from henceforth even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." We can see by this, we're finally going to have God ruling over us. And we are to be heirs and co-heirs with Christ, as we can read in later chapters. Or we are going to be there to help Jesus Christ, to be there to be rulers with him. I've said before in my congregation, well, in other places too, and I said, now is our time. This is the time when we are going through the holy days. We're learning more of God's plan of salvation. Each time we keep each holy day, we should be learning and getting much more closer to God, of his way of salvation, that we are going to be a part of that someday, that we are going to, again, be there, not again, but we're going to be with God to be rulers and rulers and workers of Christ. It's a tremendous thing, because you see, it's a thing that America, that all the world has forgotten. There is a God. There is a God who knows all things, that he is going to bring about these things that he says is going to happen. He's the only one that can do it. Because of the increase of his government, there's going to be no end. Christ will be there forever, forever, and ever. It's really something to think about, because you see, as I look back again, I've been going now for many, many years, been through many, many things. I've seen many people. I've been through many churches and heard them and been a part of them. But yet, this message wasn't given out. I don't remember ever hearing this message until I came into the Church of God. No, it was generally heaven and so on. You know the story there. That the thing is that people did not believe, or they did not know, that there would be a ruler come, that Jesus Christ would come back, and upon his shoulders would be the government, and it would last forever. There would be peace, genuine peace, forever and ever. And it's really something to understand, because when we do understand this, as I said, as we go through the holy days, we should be learning more and more about this plan that God has of eventually having the kingdom back here on this earth. We are going to be a part of it. Jesus Christ will be the head overall. Let's look at Romans 8 and read verse 7. Romans 8 and verse 7. It's just something, again, that people today don't want to hear, because I've had occasion to talk at different times with people. I meet a lot of people around in so many places that I've been going. And people would ask, well, why do you go to church on Saturday? Why don't you go like the rest of the people? I imagine many of you, maybe all of you, have had the same question. And so one question generally leads to another. And then when you mention the coming of Jesus Christ, that he is coming to the earth, not to make a quick pass and go back again and take a few with him, but he will be on this earth. The Bible tells that he will be right here on this earth. And so the thing is that we will know that there will be then peace forever and ever. There won't be a need of having armies or plans of war, nothing like that. Think how good that's going to be, when you don't have to worry about your sons, your grandsons, or any other relative going off to fight battles. That will be so great, even that part of it. Let's look at Romans 8 in verse 16, as I said, Romans 8, verse 16 and 17. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs of Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together. It's so very, very important. There is suffering to be going on. Evidently, there's going to be, according to and other scriptures, that there will be even martyrdom, perhaps. There will be many things going on that the ordinary person won't be able to stand. But as God is with us, as God, as we look to him, as we look for him to help us, and he will be helping us. But the nations about that have kicked him out, has kicked his commandments out, he's not going to listen to them. They're going to be wondering, well, what happened? We're so bad. And I can't help but think of something else. I remember day before yesterday, I believe it was, that there was a huge one-page ad in the U.S. News of the main television ministries getting together. And, of course, my friend, I've met him before and sang with him before, Bill Gaither and his group are going to get together. But they're getting together for political reasons. Of all things, the thought that went through my mind, because I'd been working on my sermon and had been looking at this, and then I thought of this, the television preachers who are supposed to be speaking of God, who does speak of God, of course, but they don't really know, they're deceived, and there's a long story, not a long story, but a story behind that. They don't really know what they're saying at times, but yet, they're all there, I don't know, there's about 10 of them, plus some songsters, they're getting together and doing this for one of the men running president. I didn't even notice who they're doing this for, but the thing is, it came through my mind that as we are children of God, should we have time for things like this? As we worship God and look to him, should we have time? No, I don't even have time for that. I know I read things and I pay attention to them because it does and will have an impact on my life. Whoever is elected, and right now we don't know, but whoever it is, it will impact all of our lives in one way or the other in the next few years. And so it's something that, of course, we want to pay attention to. But you see, we want to look at the long run. We're looking on down the road. As I say, we went through the feast and the holy days. We weren't looking at right now. We were looking at this plan of God that goes right off on into eternity. This is something that we mustn't forget, that there are people today, they'll cry, peace, peace. There isn't any peace. I know there was one of the candidates who were the minor candidates who said he had the way to peace and he had the plan that would end all wars. I thought, no, not according to God's word, is not going to get do it, because they've thrown God out of the system. They've thrown God out of the equation. And so when people are calling on God now to help them, as I read before, God says, I'm not going to listen to you because you wouldn't listen to me. So these are the things that I want to say, because you see, it is something that we've got to be looking at today as Christians, that as we look at what's going on in the world, we should acknowledge ourselves. We should pray each time that we acknowledge God as our Savior, that Jesus Christ is coming back again, and that we are learning now to be a part of his government. We will be a part of it. And that's so very, very important, because as we learn, as we grow, as we do God's will, as we look at him in all the things that we are learning to do, I know I've learned much, much more, and I believe any of you could say the same thing, that we have learned much more in the past few years that will help us more in helping to establish the kingdom of God. And so God will call upon us. Christ will be having us to help him, because it's a promise that we would. But let's look now right quickly at Jeremiah 14 and verse 9. We'll start there, because this is something that I remember when my wife read this chapter, that this was one of the main things many, many years ago that caused her to understand more herself of God's truth of the coming kingdom of God. Let's look at Jeremiah. Let's see, I want to get 14. I want to get in, start really at verse 4 is what I want to do. Verse 4, Zechariah 14, verse 9, because I had Jeremiah on my mind for some reason. But let's look at Zechariah 14, verse 4, and it says, "And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall split in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. And there shall be a very great valley, and half the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south." As I look at this, can it be anything that's going to be secretive then? Will that be a secret or something like that happening? I don't think so, because today, when a volcano goes off in California or in Seattle or anywhere else around the world, you know about it right now. When something like this is going on, Christ is coming back, and the very topography is being changed, that's going to be noted. That's going to be known everywhere. And it says, "You shall flee to the valley, for the valley of the mountain shall reach to Azalea. You shall flee as you fled from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah." But then what I want to do is going over here to verse 9. We read, "And the Eternal shall be king, the Lord shall be king over all the earth. And in that day there shall be one Lord and his name one." One Lord and his name one. We're going to know exactly who our leader is, who is leading this government. It's going to be Jesus Christ. And then when we go again, we can read on down to verse, verse 16. I lost my place. "It shall come to pass that everyone is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem, and even go up from year to year to worship the Lord of hosts and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." That is a verse that is so great that as I look at that, it proves something right there. He's coming back here to this earth. He's coming back to rule, and we're all going to keep the feast. We're all going to be keeping the Feast of Tabernacles with God. "But it shall be," verse 17, "that whoso will not come up of the families of the earth into Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain." So it goes on to tell that people who don't keep the feast, there's going to be terrible things happen, that it won't be well with them, because there will be punishment of Egypt and of all nations that don't come to keep the feast. So we can see how important that the holy days are. For one thing, we can see this. Christ is going to be there leading the nations. We are going to keep the holy days, which has depicted the plan of God, and we'll be keeping that then. Because, you see, the election of our leaders, no matter who wins it, we who are baptized members of the Church of God, we're going to be watching and praying for the King of Hosts to come back. Because I read again, and you don't need to turn to it, in Luke 21:36, "Watch ye therefore, and pray always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things." That's not a thing of self-preservation at all. But that is something that we want to be there, that we are there to stand before Jesus Christ. We want to be there. I've always said, I thought many, many years ago, that I would be alive when Christ comes. Now I'm not so sure of that now, physical livelihood. But of course, as we read in 1 Corinthians 15 and the book of Thessalonians, that the dead will rise first. Then we who are alive, as Paul said, remain, will be coming up to see Christ. So it's not a question, really, of being afraid that you won't be seeing Christ. Because if you obey him, if you do his will, if you obey him as you've learned to do, then whether you are dead or alive, you're going to see Christ when he comes. That's a promise right there that's given. And so we read too that, I want to go back to Revelation 22 and verse 20 right quickly and read from that. Because we read there, Revelation 22 and verse 20, he said, "He which testifies these things says, surely I come quickly. Amen, even so, or yes, Lord, come quickly. Yes, Lord, come." And so it's a thing that we want to understand here, that I, for myself, every night I will pray to God, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." Because I recognize myself that going on the way it is, that not only is there going to be much more death and destruction, much more there's going to be more people going into the livelihoods of today. We have more homosexuals. We have more people wanting same-sex marriage. All these things which are coming about, our young people are going to be immersed in this as we go on and on and on. So again, as I say, I pray always, as lately I have, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." Because it's surely going to happen soon because of all the things that are going on. But the main thing the main thing I want you all to remember as we think of these things is, as I said, Christ called us for a reason. Christ called us for a purpose. We're not here just to do nothing. No, we do something when we attend the Feast of Tabernacles. We do something when we come in and we just maybe move a chair or we greet somebody or something like that. That's service. That's what we're supposed to do until Christ comes. And then when He comes, we will have more power, according to the Scriptures, to do what He would have us do. So keep praying, keep looking, keep doing the watchful waiting, because sooner or later, Jesus Christ is coming back. And when He does, we're going to see Him. And again, pray for that day, because I do.